Just a minute, Dan. You didn't know what you were playing coming back.
Damn, what is that?
Dan's going deep. I like
it's
it.
Radio one on one. Listen to rejoins in queue before you play.
I like it though. Kind of slow down the. We do have to make a transition here.
Like MacGyver and Knight Rider, which is two shows that Rick Tallenter loved watching when he was 30.
He's still 30, isn't he?
Yeah, MacGyver. Yeah, I had one daughter that watched MacGyver endlessly. Very smart, and I was always afraid she was going to make a bomb out of some, you know, stuff from the kitchen.
Right? I always, yeah. I thought like, watching MacGyver that I could be some, like, I could do that, and then I like never worked out. What's up, Rick?
All you need is, I don't know, man. Everything's good. It's good. It's good seeing you the other day, Mark. Adam, Jared. You know, I tell Jared I'm still recovering from a pinch in the back of my leg that his dad gave me 30 years ago.
Rick, we were talking about that, just the relationship with you and my father. I remember my dad telling me there wasn't a lot of guys in the media that he let in and here in Chicago, and you were one of those guys.
Yeah, he was special. You know, I mean, I don't need to tell you that, but seeing it from my vantage point, he was just, deep inside, he had this good heart. I mean, not even deep inside. He just had it. It was there. And, you know, I remember when he first came into the league, he was very young, and he was very shy in a way, very, very shy. And I'm going back, I think this was, man, this must have been like 1970, I don't know, 5, 74. They were, yeah. Bears were practicing at Ferry Hall in Lake Forest, which was a girls' school. And I think it's torn down. It's condos or something now. But, you know, I could see something in Waller that was just different, completely different from any of the other players I'd ever interviewed. I was a young guy myself, so, you know, I grew up as a journalist, and he grew up as a football player and a man. We both did. It was wonderful.
That's Rick Tallenter from the Chicago Sun-Times. This is The Beat here on 720 WGN. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Jared Payton, all here. And the reason we're having Rick on right now is because he's got a phenomenal five-part series in the Sun-Times this week called A Season Under the Gun. And it's, look, we're all living in a city right now that is torn by violence. And, you know, it's kind of weird because, let's be honest, we're not really living in it. But a lot of people here are. And as we see these news stories every single day come in, how many, you know, it's like a routine we're in the morning. What did Donald Trump tweet today that's stupid, and how many people got shot yesterday? I mean, that's how the morning start, unfortunately, these days. And it's hard though, Rick, to like connect with the communities that we're not really a part of. And what I love about the series that you wrote this week about Orr Academy and the basketball team is the connection that you were able to make with not just people, but, you know, kids still that are living in these communities.
Yeah, I wanted to humanize it. You know, I'm a sports writer, but I'm the things that have always been most interesting to me is what's going on in society and how sports relates to that. And particularly, I really like young people. I have, like, you know, teenage young males. Nobody wants them around. I mean, believe me, stores don't want them. You know, I'm hanging on the corners. Nobody likes teenage boys unless they're playing a sport. And so the players at Orr, you know, great group of kids. I've come to know them all, and they're all different personalities, believe me. And yet they have to exist in this world that is very suspicious of them. It's very circumscribed by the area where they stay. I mean, you know, there are kids in this neighborhood on the west side. The teachers will tell me, and some of the cops, they've never been to Lake Michigan, even though it's about, I'd say, 5 or 6 miles to the east from there. Some of the kids have never been downtown. They're kind of like just hindered. They're in this area, and this, as you said, is where we see the daily toll of the gun violence, the shootings, and the deaths that just blow your mind. You become numb to it because you just can't process it. Last year there were 780 murders, 780 homicides, and it's like, well, I mean, that's way more than we suffered in Afghanistan or Iraq, and yet we live here, but it doesn't affect us. It's on the west, southwest, on the west sides in these pockets, and it seems intractable to almost any kind of help that we give to it. And yet these kids are going to be our citizens, and they're trying to make it. They're trying to get through this. If you're a 16 or 17-year-old boy on, you know, say the west side where this is located, where Orr is, at Chicago and Pulaski, you have to wade through a minefield every day, and you have to be careful. The things that I used to do in high school, we'd get away with, you know, fight in a parking lot or something like that, or, you know, driving, speeding, or, you know, illegal drinking beer cans, you know, a bunch of guys out. You do that, you know, you're taking your life in your hands for these things that used to be just simple teenage transgressions that we all did, we all, you know, were part of. So I really feel for these kids. And you know, I picked Orr High School because of the coach, Lou Adams, very special guy. And I've been told by our prep writer, Michael O'Brien, has been doing it a long time. He said, you know, you're going to like Lou. Lou is, I mean, he's just crazy during games. My God, he sweats, got a shaved head, you know. And I told him, I said, you're going to die during one of these games. I guarantee you're just going to, your head's going to explode. So anyway, he's a very honest, open guy. I really like him a lot. And he helped me do this stuff. I just sort of gradually embedded myself with the team, you know, went to a lot of games, talked to people surrounding the community of Orr basketball, and tried to put a human face on this incredible violence in our city that basically doesn't affect most of us on a, you know, day-to-day. But we see the numbers every day, as you said, along with those crazy Trump tweets. And, you know, we got to do something about it. This is what we're known for around the world. People will ask you in another country, you know, you live in Chicago, man, is it, are you worried? Are you in danger? And you can say, no, I live in Lincoln Park. I live in the Loop, or, you know, the South Loop, or I live in one of the suburbs. And like, you know, I haven't heard a gunshot except during deer season up in Wisconsin. And yet these other places, gunshots are common. I mean, I just can't imagine. I've never been able to comprehend that, where your kids might be playing in your front yard, little yard, and this happened down in when I was writing a while back about Murray Park, where Derek Rose is from, in Englewood, down there near 71st Street, 73rd, wherever it was. And a little kid was shot right in the front yard, like on the steps, like maybe 10 feet from his grandfather. It was a bullet ricocheting off the sidewalk, wherever, came out of an alley. He wasn't the target, and he's killed. It was like, where do we live, you know? And it's a very difficult problem. It's not an easy fix, but there are ways. Guys like Arne Duncan, the former U.S. Education, the Secretary of Education, he's back in Chicago. He was the head of Chicago schools. And I've talked with him through the years, and he says, Rick, I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful. I think there are ways that we can combat this, and everybody will agree the number one way is, first of all, you know, got to reduce the guns, and then the second thing, give everybody hope. And find some way to give people jobs, because young men without jobs, that's not a good situation.
You got a quote from Arnie in here where he's talking to some of those kids. How many of you know how many people have been shot by 10? You know, how many of you know 2 people were shot, 10 people, 20? 20 people. How many kids in here know that? Half the hands in the room went up. I thought that was just one of the incredible quotes in the piece. But, you know, it's funny, and it's not funny, that's the wrong word, but you're, Rick, you put yourself on the huge sports map with Heaven as a Playground. 1976 book comes out, you're writing about playgrounds in Brooklyn in 74. It's heartbreaking to read in this piece that these kids won't go to the playground to play because it's too dangerous to play basketball, so they're inside. I mean, that was just crushing to read.
Well, that's one of the great heartbreaks of all of this, that, you know, playgrounds should be sacred, because the reason I chose that title way back when is because, you know, Heaven is a Playground. Play is what means you live in a free and civilized country. People in war zones, the kids don't play. And playing is the work of children. Children need to play. It's where you learn so many things. It's where you relax your mind. It's where you learn teamwork. You learn freedom. You learn the boundaries of what is involved in play. Plus, it's physical. And we are physical creatures. And you know, one thing I mentioned with the obesity crisis, and, you know, it's very hard to eat healthy meals. Well, you can't just say, hey, I'm going to run down the block, 2 blocks, to Jimmy's house. I'm just going to run there, and your mom says, okay, go ahead. You can't do that because she knows you're going from one little gang neighborhood, it might be you know, 2 blocks long or 1 block long, you're at the edge of it, into another one, and something might happen, whether it's crossfire or somebody says, hey, what you got to do with it? Throwing up gang signs, and it might be enough to kill you or shoot you. And if you can't do that, then you really don't live in what we should consider America. I mean, this is the lack of freedom to play is just a devastating loss for all children.
Yeah, Rick, you know, just reading the piece, there's so much that I want to get into, but it's some of the schools that I speak to, whether it's on the west side or south side, a lot of these kids talk about how they fear going to school and then leaving school to go home, and especially kids that play sports, they'd rather just be in the gym, you know, playing basketball because that is the safe place. But in the piece, you were talking, and not just the boys, you were saying that you were having a conversation and then there was a fight that broke out amongst the girls in right out there. And then next thing you know, you're saying that, you know, the social media has changed now where people, especially the girl, they say the girls are almost as worse because of when you look at the social media, how they go after each other. You talk about building infrastructure or something, jobs in the South Side, the West Side. To me, that's the only way to give hope, because that's sad to hear a kid has never been to the city and he lives so close.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Jared. And the problem is, it's complex, but in certain ways, social media has compounded it, because, you know, that old saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's absolutely untrue. In fact, it might be less true than almost any one of those little sayings from the playground. Words can devastate you. Girls have committed suicide because of being shamed on social media. It's as if every young girl, well, you know, teenagers, we call them girls if you're in high school, and you call boys if you're in high school, not men or women. It's as if every one of them has the ability to pass a note to everybody all around that can ridicule you. They might say, hey, so-and-so is fat, or so-and-so, you know, looks like this, or did you see something that can just ruin the way you feel about yourself. And, you know, when I saw this, you know, Lou Adams is also the assistant dean of students there at Orr, and he's got to break up these fights. He's got to stop this stuff. And, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a 14-year-old girl who shot and killed another 14-year-old girl, wounded a 16-year-old, and she was given the gun by, I don't know, somebody, either her uncle or somebody gave her the gun, and somebody just said, you know, this is how you got to end it. You got to kill this person with a gun. So this is not, you know, ridiculous stuff. There's a movie out a while back called Mean Girls, you know, and this is Mean Girls taken to an extreme. It is hard being a teenage boy. It's really hard being a teenage girl. You're not quite a girl. You're not quite a woman. You have this sexuality. You don't know how to use it. The boys don't know how to use their, you know, this mid-range between being a boy and a man. As I said, nobody wants any of these people around anywhere. Nobody wants teenage boys at their, you know, in their store. They don't want them at the mall. They don't want them, you know, congregating anywhere. And then the second group they don't want is teenage girls. They may be laughing and doing all this stuff, but, man, then there's boys hanging around. All these social dynamics are at play, and you throw guns into the mix, and you throw a lack of adult supervision and the breakdown of the families. I saw a girl come to Orr with her mother, you know, to the front desk. And believe me, the front entrances to these high schools now look like they don't have handles on the doors. It's just a big metal door as if you're going into, you know, a prison or something. That's how they are in most of the city schools. So you get in there, and then you have to go through a metal detector, and there's some guards there. You get to the front desk, and I was just standing there waiting for Lou Adams to come from wherever, and I'm talking to the guard who's there, and this woman gets here with her daughter, and she says, you know, I'm here for whatever. And the guy says, well, you know, you're an hour and a half late. She said, I told somebody I couldn't get here on time, either working or just whatever. And the guy said, hey, man, you know, meetings are whoever the principal or whoever you got to meet with is on to another meeting. You know, got to reschedule it. So the woman just says, okay. They turn around and walk back out. And I said, what's going on? If that girl had been in a fight, she's just trying to get back into school, and her mother is not responsible enough to get there on time. You know, and she probably had other issues. They don't have cars. So many of these people, they're poor. 97% poverty rate. How are you supposed to do something as simple as get to a place that's not right by the train? You got to wait for a bus if you do that. Buses are very dangerous sometimes, especially for young men. I mean, the whole thing, daily life, is incredibly complicated and dangerous, and it's just, it's heartbreaking. It truly is. And when I wrote Heaven as a Playground, I wanted to just embed myself in the culture of outdoor basketball and a playground, which was, it still had order to it then. There'd been somebody shot that was in Brooklyn way back in the 70s, but in general, it was safe. There was a park manager. There were, you know, the park closed at a certain hour. Kids came there. It was like you know, we used to call it like the country club. It was like, you know, ghetto country club. But it was beautiful. It was wonderful. Basketball courts, handball courts, you know, and it was, there was a sense of community. And when those playgrounds are taken away from the kids for play and all these extra elements are brought in there, man, it's something. I'm still processing it myself.
So that sounds like the number one thing that you would recommend to the mayor and anybody else in charge is to provide security and protection to the playground so kids can, and you can get that country club feel back. Because you put in the piece that once Ben Wilson was shot, and if you haven't seen that 30 for 30,
it's great.
It's unbelievable, and it's painful, and it's brutal, and all of it. You know, that the protection for like the special kids in those neighborhoods went away. I'm reading that. That was just painful to read that part too. Maybe some safety to the playgrounds could change things, Rick.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. You do need things like that, but kids, to get to that park, they have to go through this area. And it's the super gangs have been really disrupted by putting big gang leaders in prison for, you know, for life. So it's all fractured and it's kind of chaotic and incoherent what these gangs actually are. A lot of times it's just might be, you know, 10 kids or 8 kids who call themselves something and they have access to guns and they sell some dope on that street. No more than that. But a little kid's got to walk through that. You know, I remember talking with Derek Rose and some of the other guys from Murray Park, and they said the gangbangers would, in a way, would look out for them. I mean, sometimes they drive into school. They tell them, you know, they protect them in a certain area, and they say, hey, you know, don't mess up like I did. We're all watching you. We're watching out for you. And that was, you know, in an odd way, comforting to them because they had a thin veil of protection. But Derek also talked about, you know, running home. I lived on Salina and like 73rd, and they had a route out of Murray Park where they could duck down and go between buildings and open a certain gate where they knew there wasn't a pit bull in there, and they could be safe from flying bullets. And they all knew when to run. So that was there then. It's so much worse now. I would love to, I mean, whatever, you know, I'm a sports writer. I'm a journalist, but I'd love to sit down with some of the city planners or whatever, and I don't know, try to figure out something or other. Because like I said, guys, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, so many players on the OR team have had come close contact with homicides and shootings. One of the kids on the sophomore team was shot in the ankle. Another kid who would have been on the team here pulled up his shirt and showed me he'd been shot. And also, then when he got out of the hospital, he'd been stabbed 3 times. You know, and I had that part in the in my story where he said, he's making a comparison 2 people on this earth can make. And when he said to me, it's way worse getting stabbed than shot. So, you know, you shouldn't have to live through things like that.
That's crazy.
I don't know. I just wanted to humanize it. And I think you guys, you know, it's good you guys do what you do and you bring a light to this. Everybody, you know, it's kind of all our responsibility.
Well, Rick,
absolutely.
I think we all appreciate the passion, not only that's coming through conversation right here, but also the 5-part series, which you can read. Go find it on suntimes.com. It's called A Season Under the Gun. And please, Rick, I mean, have those meetings that you're talking about. I mean, we need more stuff like this. We need more stuff, conversations like this.
Yes.
Yep. I'll try to, guys. You know, I'm a citizen in this city, in this state, this world, and so what happens here is important to me.
Rick, you're the best. Appreciate what you're doing. Thanks for jumping on. And again, I read all 5 parts today, so it's never too late to read the 5-part series. And it was a great start to my day, and also a painful start all at the same time. So thanks for doing it, Rick.
All right, thanks, Mark. Thanks, guys. Take care.